Pat Stack.
Level. I don't know the rules anymore or something's changed, but I can't believe it.
It's a 4-0 goal. Big cheer. Are you kidding me? What is that?
It's NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Crew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things NHL. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg in studio with you for the next 2 hours. We're going to talk about your Winnipeg Jets from the highs to the lows, the highs of a three-game winning streak to the low of last night's 5-2 defeat to the hands of the Columbus Blue Jackets. We'll cover everything Winnipeg Jets related. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here in studio. Send your text messages to 129090. If they are insightful, or if I'm in a good mood, maybe I'll even read them on air. You can also find all of your latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio at our website, illegalcurve.com. I say good evening to Sean. I say good evening to Ezzy. Gentlemen, good to see you both. We start with last night's Winnipeg Jets defeat at the hands of the Columbus Blue Jackets. The Jets flying high after a three-game winning streak came crashing down last night in another dispiriting performance on home ice, where the Jets' warts were laid bare yet again for everyone to see.
Yeah, Drew, I would say that the Jets were simply outplayed by the Columbus Blue Jackets. And when you talk about the three turnovers, I mean, that really was a big story of the game. But to me, this Columbus Blue Jackets team is a bona fide Stanley Cup contender. In fact, during the season preview show that we had a couple weeks back, I picked Columbus to go all the way to the Stanley Cup final. So I'm really high on Columbus.
Period.
Thankfully, I'm not high on something else,
yes,
Drew.
Yes, of course not.
When you're talking about this Blue Jackets team, guys, we know that they got into the playoffs last year and they got out in the first round at the hands of the Pittsburgh Penguins. But this is a team that has Stanley Cup aspirations. They want to go further in the Stanley Cup playoffs. But those turnovers were the key. And to me, it wasn't Steve Mason's fault. This is not on Steve Mason. And I realize Steve Mason has had three tough games, his first three games as a member of the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, tough is one word you could use for him.
But, Drew, when you're playing the Columbus Blue Jackets, mm-hmm. a top offensive team, and they were a top offensive team and a top defensive team last year, and they are again this year so far, 5-6 games into the season. I mean, if you turn the puck over like Nikolaj Ehlers did on that first goal that Cam Atkinson scored, mm-hmm. or you turn the puck over like Blake Wheeler did on the second goal that was scored by Nick Foligno, I mean, this is a team that's going to make you hurt when you do that. So the Jets were not very good defensively, and quite frankly, they weren't very good offensively at all. I mean, the Columbus Blue Jackets should have been up one or two goals in the first period. Steve Mason kept them in that game, and even when the score was 1-0 for the Columbus Blue Jackets, if you remember, the Jets took a penalty shortly after Cam Atkinson scored that first goal, mm-hmm. and Steve Mason made that flurry. I think he made 3 or 4 saves, and he was laying down and doing the snowman.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Steve Mason, I would say the only goal that you could maybe fault him, Drew, was the Lucas Sedlak goal,
which was the fourth goal of the game for the Blue Jackets. And the problem with that is, of course, that's the backbreaking goal in that it turns a 3-1 game into a 4-1 game.
Sure, but even on that goal, Toby Enstrom has the puck in his own zone, and he goes back, and it's Pierre-Luc Dubois that actually causes the turnover. Lucas Sedlak picks up the puck near the goal line, mm-hmm. and he puts that backhanded shot that kind of surprises Steve Mason, and it was Zach Delp that was crashing the net there, and it was a pass that you were thinking that was going to come, but even that goal was a turnover. So 3 of the 5 goals were turnovers. Maybe the fourth goal, you say, you know, Mason should have had back, but the fifth goal was a pretty nice shot by Zach Werenski, right?
The fifth goal, and we'll get Sean in on this, by the fifth goal, the game was over. It didn't matter to me.
Right.
The fifth goal is relatively meaningless. Here's my problem with last night's efforts are, even the first period, where the Blue Jackets were the far better team, the Jets at least had a structure to their game. And sure, Columbus dominated top to bottom in the first period, and the Jets couldn't get anything going.
Well, the Jets couldn't get their puck out of their own zone.
Right, but at least they kept everything that the Blue Jackets did to the outside. So that none of the chances the Blue Jackets got in the first period, I would say, were A-plus chances. So yes, the Jets were outplayed, but the Blue Jackets are a better team than the Jets, so it makes sense that they were outplayed. It's the giveaways that you just mentioned, Ezzy, are inexcusable for any team whatsoever. They're just, you can't turn the puck over in that manner at the NHL level against a team with Stanley Cup aspirations and not expect that it's going to bite you in the behind.
Right, and it's not that we're trying to get on Nikolaj Ehlers or Blake Wheeler.
They had bad games.
Right, and Nikolaj Ehlers was the NHL's first star of the week, and Blake Wheeler's the captain of this team. Wheeler, Ehlers, Scheifele, those are your offensive drivers. So it's not just on all those guys. What we're talking about is a team collective here. As a team, the Jets were not good defensively.
Let me ask you guys this. With the roster the Jets put out there last night, which is probably, with the exception of Adam Lowry, probably coming back into the lineup, more or less the lineup that you're going to see from the Jets for the next month or so, as Matthew Perreault's out of the lineup. Who is that lineup beating? Because every good team in the NHL looks at that lineup and says, well, we know what we have to do. We have to shut down the Jets' top two lines. And other than that, we have nothing to worry about. Because there's absolutely nobody on that bottom six of the Jets last night who's putting any fear whatsoever into any of your opponents. The bottom six cannot...
Well, it has to be better.
It cannot continue. There's no evidence that it's going to be better, though. There's no evidence that should tell you. If you're a diehard Jets fan, there's nothing you can point to thus far this season that says any of those six guys, seven guys, who are making up the bottom six on a night-in, night-out basis, are going to be a catalyst to providing more offense from the back end,
right,
from the bottom of the
right.
lineup.
And you mentioned Adam Lowry, who had 15 goals last year, and you hope that Joel Armia takes the next step. He had a goal last night. But, I mean, you have to get internal improvements, Drew. I mean, these are the players that are going to form the bottom six. You're going to get Matt Hendricks back, but to your point, you're not expecting much offense out of Matt Hendricks. At this point in his career, he's a veteran leader who's going to provide more so defensive responsibilities, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking about Marco Dano, Nick Petan, Andrew Kopp, Sean Mathias. I mean, these are the players in your bottom six who have to start producing, unless you're going to have to make a trade.
I think the operative word, you just used the key word there and at the end of your sentence, is a trade. But sticking with last night, Sean, I mean, the performance was not good. The Jets were outclassed by a better team. But really, this was a close game up until... You know, the 4-1 goal. Up until the last minute and a half of the second period, this was a close game. Then Sedlak scores that bad goal, terrible goal, and the Jets had nothing in the third period. They showed absolutely no resolve whatsoever in the third period on home ice.
Drew, I think Josh Morrissey summed up last night's game very well. I wanted to play a clip from last night's post-game scrum with Josh Morrissey. I think Sean has it queued up right now. I think he summed up that game really well. Have a listen.
You know, it starts from our back end. We weren't efficient moving the puck today. It just looked like we were standing still a lot from the back end or forwards, everyone. We were just, our feet weren't moving, our intensity wasn't at the level it needed to be, and, you know, you're playing against a really solid team over there, and they're going to take advantage of that, and they're very aggressive, so if you're not quick, you're not fast at making those breakout plays and making those plays out of our own end, and then through the neutral zone, they work hard, and they're going to, have a lot of takeaways, and that's what killed us.
Is that not a great summation of the game?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't... It's not like the Blue Jackets did anything tricky to defeat the Winnipeg Jets last night. The Jets were just lethargic.
They were faster. They had a better forecheck going.
They were more determined.
And they had a higher compete level. And I realize that's a cliche, but in the third period, I mean, the Jets looked like a defeated team.
The Jets had showed no resolve in the third period whatsoever. They might as well not have played that third period last night because nothing happened in it. I mean, I know each team scored a goal, towards the end of the period, but, I mean, those goals didn't count for anything. The Jets didn't show any signs of life whatsoever. And that's what's most troubling, Sean, is that three times this year now, when the Jets have really had adversity... Because the only, sure you can maybe say they had adversity in the Edmonton game when Edmonton scored the two quick goals to tie it up. But any time other than that, the Jets have faced any adversity, they've just absolutely rolled over and not shown any fight whatsoever.
I think a lot of credit's got to go to the Columbus Blue Jackets. Yes, the Jets did not play well. They were unable to adapt to what Columbus was throwing at them. Columbus did an incredible job of taking away the neutral zone out of the Jets. The Jets could barely even skate the puck past center ice before three Blue Jackets were surrounding them. We really did see the well-oiled machine that is the Columbus Blue Jackets, especially in the third period when they just hit autopilot into a defensive structure and they just took everything away. And the Joel Armia goal... It's gorgeous. It's a garbage time touchdown. It's
meaningless.
Exactly.
It's meaningless. It's one thing if you get that goal when it's a 3-1 game, or if you get it early in the third period when it's a 4-1 game,
yeah,
then maybe it matters. But when it's a 5-1 game, it's a completely meaningless goal.
And last night was a perfect example of why you need to have three good scoring lines.
Yeah.
Because until Kyle Connor was moved up to Mark Scheifele's line, the line of Nikolaj Ehlers, Mark Scheifele, and Blake Wheeler had limited offensive chances. I wouldn't say they had a bad game, but they didn't have a great game either, right? No. And then the line of Brian Little, Patrick Laine, and Kyle Connor, and then Nikolaj Ehlers was moved down to that line. They didn't have much going offensively at all either. So, I mean, they had some chances, but for the most part, I mean, the possession battle was completely dominated by Columbus, especially in the first period. I think it was 70%
to 30%. It was about 60, 65 yeah. to 35,
right,
if I'm not mistaken.
And it almost seemed like it was worse than that. So
yeah,
that's one of those games where, sure, Mark Scheifele makes a beautiful pass to Kyle Connor, who gets his first NHL goal of the season. But aside from that, I mean, the Jets had maybe four or five quality scoring chances in that game. And when you can't rely on one of the third or fourth lines to chip in some offense or to get some offense from the defense, it's a problem.
I'm looking back. You know, I'm looking now and we're six games through the season. And I'm trying to find a reason to believe that this team is playoff caliber. And right now, I couldn't tell you what that reason would be. They have two good lines. No argument than that. They have a good top six. But then the bottom six has not produced 1 point in five-on-five action. And it's not like they're playing Stanley Cup contenders every single night. They have had some games against weaker opponents.
Well, they've played some good teams. Columbus, Toronto, Edmonton.
Yeah. But, I mean, these are teams you want to measure yourself up against.
Truth, let's be honest here. I mean, we all agree the bottom six has not been good. It has to be better. As far as, you know, having hope that it will be better, I mean, well, that depends who you ask.
I
think they can be better.
I don't know. Let me, you know. Okay.
I don't know how much better they can be, Drew, but as far as,
you've
you know, whether or not this team is going to be a playoff team, we're six games into the season,
yeah,
and they're 3-3.
Well, and I guess
so
they should
not,
be fortunate.
They're not 1-5.
No, and I guess they are fortunate that they're 3-3 and that they haven't really played what I would describe as good hockey for the most part. So that's, you know, a silver lining and everything. But you look at this team in the bottom six, and you talk about they have to be better. Well, we've watched this bottom six. And again, you know, cards on the table, Adam Lowry out of the lineup certainly affects the bottom six. But you've watched these bottom six players for a majority of the last couple seasons, and I have no reason to believe that any of them are going to develop into anything other than what they currently are. I mean, maybe if Nick Petan was playing in a different role, maybe with more skilled players, he would be a more dynamic player. But, I mean, he didn't do anything last night. Marco Dano might as well not have played until the only thing he did was take a penalty in the third period. I mean, it just can't continue because there's no reinforcements coming up.
Right, and Joel Armia was on the third line during practice today. Paul Maurice moved Joel Armia up. So I think when you're talking about the third line, I mean, Joel Armia is a guy that I think you expect more offense out of. But absolutely, Drew, when you're talking about Marco Dano, Marco Dano is a skilled player. In five games, he has no points. I mean, he has to show the Jets more.
Never mind,
or Brendan Lemieux will be in the lineup.
Never mind no points. No impact.
Yeah, he's been invisible.
He might as well not have been playing.
I wouldn't be surprised, by the way, if Lemieux's in the lineup on Friday.
At this point in time, Brendan Lemieux will add something to the lineup.
He had two goals on Sunday for the Moose. Why not put him in?
At least he's performed at that level. At this point in time, you need to get something, anything, from your bottom six. And right now, the way it's currently constructed, it's not giving you anything, and that can't continue. Because you look at the schedule for the rest of this month, and you have Minnesota on Friday, and Minnesota's definitely banged up. But you got Pittsburgh twice, and you got Columbus again. So this schedule ain't getting easy. And if you're not, if your top six is being neutralized, you need to find offense from another source. When we come back, we'll talk about the Wild. They're going to be in town on Friday to meet the Jets. That's up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Wednesday evening, you're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. For more information on how to make your teeth ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Jets in the Wild, the first divisional matchup of this relatively young season between the Jets and their Central Division rivals will take place on Friday night at Bell MTS Place. The Minnesota Wild come into Winnipeg certainly banged up. A litany of injuries suffered by the Minnesota Wild. They're going to be without five regulars likely on Friday. Zach Parise, Mikael Granlund, Nino Niederreiter, Marcus Foligno and Charlie Coyle. There's a possibility Foligno plays. He injured himself in a fight last week, but if he plays, he's going to be wearing the full face shield to protect his jaw. I don't know if he's wearing a mouth guard or not, but we'll have to ask Dr. Les Rikus of Linden Market Dental Center. The Wild come into the game having only played four games. 1-1-2 in their first four games, so certainly a slow start for the Minnesota Wild, with only the one win in the four games, but that certainly is also offset by the two overtime defeats, because that's what good teams do, is they don't lose in regulation. They steal points when they don't really deserve them.
Yeah, Drew, you just mentioned the Wild injuries. The Wild are so injured right now that this week at practice, Wild assistant coach Darby Hendrickson actually dressed in full gear as a fourth-line forward. Darby Hendrickson is 45 years old.
Well, I mean, who did he play? He played for the Leafs, did he not? Played for the Wild. He bounced around.
Yeah, he was a bit of a journeyman forward, a good scrappy forward.
Yeah.
But the point is, he's the coach.
Exactly.
Right?
I believe that was also, if I'm not mistaken, I believe that was the practice that Zach Parise was participating in and then left early because he had a setback with his injury. They've been very circumspect about what the specific injury is, if it's related to his back that he's had a litany of problems with over the last few years. But regardless, this Minnesota Wild team comes into Winnipeg on Friday night certainly banged up, so it's a prime opportunity, because if the Jets are going to use their injuries as an excuse, and they haven't so far, but if you want to compare apples to apples, the Minnesota Wild being without four or five of their regulars, not bottom six regulars, top six regulars, it's a prime opportunity for the Winnipeg Jets.
They're hurting big time right now. And you mentioned Mikael Granlund. He might come back within the next week. He's definitely not going to play Friday because he hasn't been practicing. He's missed the last three games. But when you're talking about Charlie Coyle and Nino Niederreiter, they're saying Nino Niederreiter is going to be out for at least two more weeks. And when you're talking about Charlie Coyle, he could be out for another 5 or 6 weeks, right? He broke his fibula.
Yeah, his injury was a 4 to 6 week long injury. And Sean, so you have the Wild coming to town on Friday, the Jets with the residue of the poor performance on Tuesday should be firm in their mind. Paul Maurice announced that Connor Hellebuyck gets the start. Sort of a weird lull in the Jets' schedule. They only played twice in 11 days from the game last night through next Thursday, when they'll be back in action after Friday's game. So it's a big lull in the Jets' schedule right now. A lot of time for practice and things of that nature. Connor Hellebuyck gets the start again in net as he looks to improve his record this season. He's been, the only Jets goaltender to garner a victory so far, and we know about Steve Mason's struggles so far this year.
Yeah, we're going to see which Jet team shows up Friday evening now. It's going to be a repeat of Mr. Hyde, or are we going to see the Doc, Dr. Jekyll, come out and play that well-structured game that we saw when they were out west? And you know, Minnesota's a well-structured team. They got rookies like Luke Cunningham, Len Ferraro, Zach Mitchell all going to be in the lineup recalled as they recover from injury. But still, We're going to see that structure that Minnesota's notorious for, a Bruce Boudreau well-coached team, and the Jets hopefully have a little, you know, a little P in their V, just ready to go, ready to fire it up, and hopefully looking to make amends for that game against Columbus.
And Sean, you know what's most surprising so far about the Minnesota Wild is in all four games that they've played, they've allowed four or more goals, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. This is a Minnesota Wild team who you expect to let in one or two goals per game.
Well, that's because that's what Bruce Boudreau is known for, is, you know, defense first as a head coach, and, mm-hmm. and Devin Dubnyk as a goaltender is usually, you know, certainly last year, at least earlier on in the season, he was the best goalie in the league for a period of time.
And Drew, even without Coyle and, you know, even without Niederreiter and Granlund and Parise, they've been scoring goals. Chris Stewart has four goals. Mm-hmm. Eric Staal's already got three. Tyler Ennis, who came over from Buffalo, he's got a couple goals. So they're not having trouble scoring goals right now. It's keeping them out of their net. And it's kind of ironic, I guess, if you want to use that word, because the defense is healthy. I mean, the only change on the defense from last year is Marco Scandella, and they've called up Mike Riley, but your top four, Ryan Suter, Jared Spurgeon's your top pair there, and then Matt Dumba and Jonas Brodin. I mean, the top four is all good.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So it's surprising that, you know, they've been giving up the amount of goals that they've been giving up. They defeated the Chicago Blackhawks in their third game. As you mentioned, they've been off for the last five games. It was the Columbus Blue Jackets that came back and beat them in overtime. Minnesota has led in the third period of all four of these games.
Yeah.
So it's a very weird 1-2-1 start to the season, right? Because they've been leading after two periods in all four games.
1-1-2 to be perfectly accurate.
There you go.
Yeah.
1-1-2.
So eventually you were eventually going to get it.
I was eventually going to get it. Yeah. It was going to add up to four eventually. But what's surprising is they have been scoring goals and they've been in the lead in these games, right? Mm-hmm. But they've only won one of them. So this is going to be a very hungry Minnesota Wild team on Friday night, even with all of the injuries that they have. I mean, they've only won one game so far, as we mentioned. So, I mean, this is a team that you don't want to take lightly. Not that the Jets are going to take team lightly.
The Jets shouldn't be in a position to take any team lightly in the entire NHL. If the Jets play with any arrogance, I don't know what the root of that arrogance would be.
This is also the Jets' first game against a Central Division opponent,
which I mentioned off the outset of this, and they were good against the Central last year. Mm-hmm. We remember that it's really against the other divisions where they had their majority of their struggles, particularly the Pacific Division. They've been 2-1 against the Pacific
Division.
They
weren't good against the East either.
No, they certainly weren't. You have to take care of business on home ice against your divisional rivals if you want to be in playoff contention. If you want to be thought of as a playoff team, you have to take care of your own business at home first and foremost.
Well, and this is the type of game, as Sean mentioned, you know, you're going to have Landon Ferraro in the lineup. You're going to have Luke Cunningham, who was their 2016 first-round pick. He's got into one game. They actually had to send him down to Iowa and then recall him because of...
They got salary cap. They've had salary cap issues all season long. In fact, a couple of the games, they went with the 11 forwards and 7 defensemen because they had injuries up front and they couldn't actually call a forward up because it would have put them over the salary cap.
Right. And so you hope that because you have last change and the Minnesota Wild have a lot of rookies in their lineup, you're hoping that you can get a mismatch, maybe get the Brian Little, Patrick Laine, and Kyle Connor line up against the Minnesota Wild's third line, something like that, right? Joel Eriksson Ek has been centering that third line. He's a rookie. So you hope to get maybe some mismatchups alongside, you know, some of these injuries that the Minnesota Wild have. But, I mean, this Minnesota Wild team, I expect this one to be a tight checking affair, and it's probably going to be a little bit more low scoring than some of the previous games. And they've had the last 5 days off, and sometimes that means that you're rusty, but sometimes, you know, it can help because you know that, you know, some of these injured bodies might be coming back, especially, as you mentioned, Drew, Marcus Foligno, not Nick Foligno. Mm-hmm. He might be back in the lineup. But, you know, Parise is an interesting one to me. He hasn't played a game yet this year.
Yeah.
He's had injury problems dating back to his days with the Devils.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's not an old player. I mean, he's got a lot of hockey left in him, but, you know, they're starting to talk about maybe him being out for the next week or two, and they really need him right now.
When you have back problem, I mean, how old is Parise now? Is he 31, 32?
Well, he was drafted in 2003.
Okay.
So he's probably 31 or 32.
Yeah, so when you're at that age, and like you said, he's got a lot of hockey left in him, but he's also
33.
He's got a lot of miles on him also. When you're talking back injuries, you really get a little nervous when you hear things of that nature.
Especially reoccurring back, and especially the style that Zach Parise plays, you know, not exactly a perimeter player.
He's a fire plug.
A guy that goes to the net hard every shift, battles along the corners, battles along the wall. So his body definitely has taken a beating over the years, and you hope the guy can pull it together.
Well, you mentioned Brendan Lemieux. It's worth mentioning that the line rushes today at practice for the Winnipeg Jets, Lemieux was the extra forward in the line rushes. There wasn't really any change to the Jets forward group based on after last night's game.
I would put Brendan Lemieux in the lineup.
I don't know what you would have to lose. I mean, right now, I don't know what you have to lose. What's the worst case scenario?
He's been a point a game player for the Moose early on this season.
Yeah,
I think he's got 5 points in 4 games, and sure, that's a small sample size, but you need some offense. And I like the kind of style that Brendan Lemieux plays. You know, he gets in on the forecheck. He's a guy that can drop the gloves if you need.
The as lethargic as the whole team was last night, the bottom six was equally as lethargic. At least Lemieux, if Brendan Lemieux played, because it would be his NHL debut, season debut, I can assure you at least of one thing is you would notice him on the ice at some point in that game. For better or worse, it might not necessarily be for a great play or anything. It might be because he takes an overly aggressive penalty.
Or protects a teammate. We've seen that in the preseason as
sure.
well.
Sure. You would at least notice Brendan Lemieux. And given that you haven't noticed anybody on the bottom six so far this year, what do you have to lose on it?
He also could slot in on the power play. I know people probably freaking out over that statement. But if Adam Lowry can't go tomorrow, which is questionable, Brendan Lemieux has carved out a real good role for himself in front of the net with the Moose, so maybe see him in that role on maybe a power play two with the Jets.
Well, the Jets didn't get any power play time last night,
so it's also hard.
I don't think you're going to see that. I don't think you're going to see any change to the power play. I believe they ended up with actually 4 seconds of power play time, which was it the Marco Dano penalty that was then immediately followed up by a Blue Jackets penalty, if I'm not mistaken.
That sounds right.
Yeah, no, it was the Ehlers hooking penalty
that was
immediately followed up by Pierre-Luc Dubois taking a hooking penalty later.
Yeah, Dano's penalty.
Dano's penalty was the other penalty in the third period. But the Jets need something. They need some form of energy. Maybe Brendan Lemieux is in the lineup. We don't know. We'll know more on Thursday and, of course, on game day skate on Friday. But the Jets in the Wild, they're in action on Friday night.
Drew, it's only the 7th game of the season, so you're not going to say it's a must-win, but it's a very important game because the Jets have 5 days off. We're going to talk about that more on Saturday's show.
Mm-hmm.
You have 5 days off after Friday's game. You want to go into that break on a positive note.
If you have the same lousy effort on Friday as you had on Tuesday, and you had the same lousy result as you had the previous Wednesday against the Leafs to open the season, and there's no patience in Winnipeg, and I understand why there's no patience in Winnipeg. I mean, you hear it from the callers, you hear it from you see it top to bottom. There's no patience for this team's performance because fans are sick and tired of seeing the same old, same old. And for the organization, they better turn it around quickly. Otherwise, I mean, it was a mausoleum last night at the arena, and I don't blame the fans for that whatsoever. The team didn't give them any reason to cheer, and that can't continue.
You went a little dark there, but okay.
When we come back, Mike Greenlay, Minnesota Wild color analyst, I sat down with him yesterday, talk about the team ahead of their visit to the Bell MTS Place on Friday night. That's up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Mike Greenlay for joining us. Mike, of course, with the Minnesota Wild. They'll be in town Friday night. In case you missed any of that interview, it's available on our website, illegalcurve.com, and on tsn1290.ca. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. With 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Winnipeg Jets, not the only team in the NHL to be feeling some pressure early on this year. Things not going very well for the Buffalo Sabres. A whole new brain trust there in Buffalo with Jason Botterill as the general manager, and Phil Housley as the head coach. The Sabres off to a slow start, 1-4-2 on the season, losing last night in Vegas. They were fortunate to get a point as they were down, I believe, 5-2 at some early on in the third period there. They were lucky to get that game into overtime. Struggles of the Buffalo Sabres. Jack Eichel, he's speaking out now. This is his team. He signed the big contract extension just before the start of the season. Here's the quote from Jack Eichel. "We've got to just figure a way to be sick of losing. I know I'm sick of losing. There's a lot of guys that are sick of losing. There's a difference between playing hard and playing hard and smart. We've got to execute our game all the way through the lineup, myself included." Struggles in Buffalo likely to continue, Ez, or do you think they turn this thing around this season?
I think it's going to continue. And I had the Buffalo Sabres missing the playoffs this year. And, you know, Drew, you mentioned they've only won one game.
Yeah.
They've played more games than any other team. They've played seven games. Offense, again, has not been the problem. They've scored 18 goals in seven games, including Evander Kane with 10 points. But they've allowed 28 goals in seven games, which, if you do the math, that's four goals a game. It's also second worst in the entire league. Mm-hmm. So I think goaltending is a problem for the Buffalo Sabres. And I think that this defense is not good enough. I mean, poor Phil Housley, he goes as, you know, from an assistant coach with the Nashville Predators, having P.K. Subban, Roman Josi, Ryan Ellis, Matthias Ekholm, and then he goes to Buffalo, and, you know, you have Rasmus Ristolainen, you have Josh Georges, you have Marco Scandella. I mean, this is a serious step back from the defense he had in Nashville, right? So I mean, I just don't think this is a very good team. You mentioned Jack Eichel. This isn't the first time Jack Eichel has voiced his displeasure with his teammates and mm-hmm. how the team is going. Jack Eichel's been fine. He's got 9 points. And actually, Jason Pominville has had a nice little start to the season after coming over from Minnesota, going back to the team that he originally started with. But this, I just don't think, is a very talented team. So I don't know what Phil Housley can get out of this group. I mean, at the best, I think you're an eighth or seventh seed in the Eastern Conference, but I think they have a long way to go to get there. And, you know, Sam Reinhart is -8 after seven games. Kyle Okposo is -7 after seven games.
Reinhart's rumored to be available via trade, or at least his name has come up in discussions over the past weekend. We heard that from a number of different of the insiders, you know, talking about the availability of Sam Reinhart. He's off to, like you said, as he has struggled this season.
And by the way, Drew, I don't know if you want to give up on him right now. He's 21 years old. He's a former second overall pick.
I don't think you would at this point because you're trading him when he's a diminished asset. Why would you trade him at this point in time? The question I have for you guys is, you know, at what point in time do you sort of give up on Robin Lehner as the answer for the Sabres' goaltending problems? Sort of parallels between Robin Lehner and, to some extent, Andre Pavlik when he was here with the Jets, in that you keep waiting and waiting and waiting for him, you know, to be something other than what he has shown to be so far. And is it a function of the defense in front of him? Well, to some extent, sure. But Robin Lehner really has never been able to show himself as a bona fide number one goaltender in the NHL, despite having a litany of opportunities to do so.
Well, and you don't have another goaltender that can step in for him, right? Chad Johnson is a career backup, with all due respect to Chad Johnson.
Yeah.
But he's a journeyman goaltender. And when you talk about Robin Lehner, he didn't have a very good year last year. And especially, as you mentioned, Drew, when you have that young decor that they have in Buffalo, Zach Bogosian is out of the lineup right now. He's not playing. But when you talk about, you know, this D-core, again, I mean, you've got a combination of, you know, some veterans like Scandella and Josh Georges. Rasmus Ristolainen is obviously their top defenseman now. But when you don't have a top-end goaltender and you have an inexperienced kind of bottom-five defense in the NHL, it's a recipe for disaster.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are problems up and down this lineup. I mean, you have some guys that can put the puck in the net. We talked about Kane, Eichel, and Pominville. Sam Reinhart's only got 2 points in seven games, both goals.
Ryan O'Reilly needs to step it up.
Yeah, Ryan O'Reilly needs to be better. I mean, you can go up and down the roster, but, you know, you talk about, you know, the third and fourth line of the Jets.
Kyle Okposo.
There's a lot of similarities between the Jets and the Sabres in that they're, you know, they're two teams that need to be better. They're two teams that have some talent, especially top, you know, flight talent. You know, Jack Eichel, you know, is going to be still a superstar in this league, but they just haven't been able to put it all together when it matters. And that they're, you know, the bottom of their lineup, the bottom six of the Sabres lineup, much like it is for the Jets, is nothing to write home about.
It doesn't. This team does not have an identity right now.
Doesn't that sound familiar? When we come back, Joe Smith of the Tampa Bay Times is going to join us. That's a team that's got an identity. Kucherov and Stamkos, not a bad little tandem to grow around. We talk about the hot start to the season for the Tampa Bay Lightning with Joe Smith. That's up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of NHL This Week starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Sean Assore, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program Joe Smith. Joe is the Tampa Bay Lightning beat writer for the Tampa Bay Times. Joe, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
No problem. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well, Joe. Appreciate your time this evening. Obviously, a great start to the season for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Before we get into the on-ice performance of the Lightning, I just want to ask you quickly about JT Brown. We know that he made sort of an impact at the start of the year by raising his fist as a silent protest during the national anthem. What has happened since then, since JT Brown raised his fist? I mean, it's certainly been a less controversial protest than what we've seen in the NFL. So what's the latest sort of on JT Brown and his speaking out against the oppression, I guess, in the Tampa Bay area and then the United States?
Well, I mean, he came out today and said basically that, you know, he did that protest October 7th in Sunrise, but he said he won't be raising his fist anymore in the anthem. He'll be more focused on doing a hands-on approach in the community, whether it's bringing awareness or to the issues you mentioned, like racial inequality and police brutality, and also, you know, work with the Boys and Girls Club and getting tickets for people who want to go to the games and just trying to get the conversation started. I think that's the whole idea behind what he did, was to get the conversation going and let people in the hockey community know, the minorities in the hockey community know, that it's not been overlooked. And it took a lot of guts, I think, for him to do that, because he doesn't have he's not as Connor McDavid, he's not as even Stamkos, he's kind of a tenuous situation for himself in the league as like a 12th forward on the Lightning team. They want to put himself out there and get that attention, which he did get a lot of attention nationwide, I think, for what he did. And now he kind of focusing his efforts on doing things in the community. He went to the police academy, or went to the police assistant academy in Tampa, went through these training exercises and such, and really got a better feel and understanding for what they do, and both sides got a better feel for what both sides are talking about right now. So I think he's done a great job as that hands-on, going to the community and going to the police and trying to learn more, and I think it's a great effort by him. So you won't see him raising his fist anymore, but he's going to do a lot more in the community, I think, to help bring some awareness to things that are very close to his heart.
You know, Joe, the Lightning are off to a great 5-1-1 start, and everyone's talking about Nikita Kucherov and Steven Stamkos and Victor Hedman, but Braden Point is following up his great rookie year from last year with 8 points in 7 games so far. Why aren't more people talking about how good of a draft day steal Braden Point was, drafted in the third round back in 2014?
Well, and we're talking about down here for sure, but I think Nikita Kucherov having a historic start with the likes of Mike Bossy and Gretzky and Lemieux, I think they're going to lose, be under the radar, so to speak, at Braden Point. But he's been phenomenal. I mean, even since last year, you know, people were surprised he made the team out of camp. And I think he was even a little surprised that he had that chance to be on the roster. But probably one of the more consistent forwards all year on both ends of the ice. I know Kucherov had the best year offensively, and he was their MVP. But Braden Point is just such an intelligent hockey player. He's got a constant motor on him. He never stops working. And there's a reason why he's playing 18, 20 minutes a night. They trust him in every situation. He's on their shutdown line that, you know, obviously, you know, covers and against the other team's top lines. He does it all. And I think gradually his time will come where he'll get his name elevated in the league and around the nation, because he is such, as you mentioned, one of those hidden gems in that draft that they got for him, because he's a really wonderful player.
Joe, Steven Stamkos has come out and said that he playing with Nikita Kucherov, he's almost reminiscent of chemistry he had with Marty St. Louis. I'm curious as to just what you've seen from the both of them. I'm talking Kucherov and Stamkos, that they've been able to work so unbelievably well together.
Well, first of all, they're both elite hockey, IQ hockey minds, and they think the game the same way. They both feel like if they're on the ice at the same time, they know where each other is going to be at a particular point. And number two, I think what you're seeing, the Marty St. Louis comparison, is because both learned from Marty the importance of playing without the puck. Like, pass the puck, find a way to get open, think 3 seconds ahead. Don't think right now, think ahead of the game to see where you're going to be, where's the puck going to be, where can I find myself to help my line make it and a better opportunity to score. And so I think that both, besides being both very talented hockey players and elite scorers, they have that hockey sense and that just that chemistry together where they both know where each other wants to be and how they want to have the puck and everything. I think that work ethic and the hockey sense, I think, carries them to where they are, which is why they're hoping that they can stay healthy the full year and see what they can do with it.
Joe Smith is our guest on NHL This Week. Joe covers the Tampa Bay Lightning for the Tampa Bay Times. Joe, we know that the big offseason move was the trade of Jonathan Drouin to the Montreal Canadiens that brought Mikhail Sergachev to the Lightning. Sergachev has played 7 games thus far. He's played in all 7 games, 4 assists in those 7 games, averaging just under 12 minutes per game. How have the Lightning been, you know, what's their reaction been to Sergachev's performance thus far this year? And is there any chance whatsoever that he's going anywhere other than the Lightning lineup this season?
Well, they liked how he's performed. I mean, I think the fact that he's been in the lineup and played 12 minutes a game says a lot about their trust and their feeling about his capability. I mean, they feel he's earned his spot in lineup. It's a matter of earning more minutes and more roles. He's a second power play unit a lot of times. He was in overtime last night on a shift there, which shows their trust. I mean, he has all the skills in the world. The size, the skating ability, the skills, you name it, to be an NHL player. Just a matter of him finding his way in the league, the intensity every day, the world-class players he plays against, and that can take time. Like, it took Victor Hedman to take time when he was the number 2 pick in the 2009 draft. It took everybody time to get through that. That's the hardest position to learn in the league. And so I would be surprised if he's anywhere else but Tampa Bay the rest of the year. He's one of their top 6 defensemen. He helps make them better. They're 5-1-1. They want to make the playoffs. They want to give themselves the best chance to win. And I think he does, even though he'll make mistakes and he'll have some struggles and ups and downs like most guys do. But I think he's an NHL player. And like I said, I think he's here to stay for long term.
Joe, Peter Budaj played Tuesday night against the Devils in that 5-4 shootout loss. That was his first start of the season. Andre Vasilevsky started the first 6 games of the year. Vasilevsky started 50 games last year. What's a real reasonable expectation for starts for Vasilevsky this year? Are we talking about 60 games, 65 games? What do you think John Cooper has planned for Vasilevsky as far as starts go?
I think around 60 or 55, 60 range. I think they want to ideally have Budaj play at least once a week or so, once every 4 or so games. So I think if they're both healthy, you'll see Vasilevsky between 55 and 60 games. And it's more physically, he can play 82 the way he's conditioned and set up. But I think it's more of a mental thing. You can't have him overworked. And the schedule works itself out this way with only 2 back-to-backs in the first month and a half where they can ride Vasilevsky through a difficult early part of the season schedule. But I think it'll be probably around 20 to 25 games for Budaj and about 55 to 60 games for Vasilevsky the rest of the way.
Joe, it's early in the season, but what have you seen from offseason acquisition Chris Kunitz thus far?
He's been good. He's playing around 10 minutes a night, and he's really more of a presence in the room, number one. Number two, he's in the fourth, third line there with Callahan, a very gritty guy. You know, finds a way to get key goals or just key small plays. So not going to be a top-line guy, not going to be a 15, 20-minute guy, but he just finds way in his role to play his role and also be a valuable influence in the room because he's a 4-time cup winner and nobody else in that room has won a cup. So very, very valuable so far, but it's still early going.
Joe Smith is our guest on NHL This Week. Joe covers the Tampa Bay Lightning for the Tampa Bay Times. Joe, he's my pick for the Norris Trophy this year. That's Victor Hedman, playing just under 26.5 minutes per game. Are you seeing another level to Victor Hedman's game this season? And you know, is he sort of demanding more of himself this year as opposed to previous years?
Well, I think he demands the same thing as he demanded the rest of his previous career, but he's playing more. He's 29 minutes on Thursday night, including 11 in the third period. He's their horse. He's their number one guy, and they're going to ride him for as long as they can. And I think that eventually he'll win a Norris Trophy, whether it's this year or next year. He's the ability of doing it. It's just a matter of they put his entire game together pretty much from the always been a really good defensive defenseman, but I think the offensive confidence he got a lot last year in the power play and overall when to join the rush, when to get involved. They have more of a shoot first mentality, and you're seeing that all come together in a full package right now.
Now, Joe, sticking with Victor Hedman, his D partner, Jake Dotchin, Steve Yzerman and the Lightning were pretty adamant that they didn't want to lose Dotchin in the Vegas expansion draft. He's now on the top pair. What have you seen out of his game? He had the breakout year last year, albeit in half of the season.
Been pretty steady. He hasn't played. I mean, he's been overall been that kind of the quiet complement to Victor Hedman for the most part. You haven't seen him get more of that physical aspect that he brings, but I think overall, I mean, he didn't play a lot in the preseason because of that violation of team rule that he had. He played one preseason game, but overall, he's been in line for every game and for the opener, and he's been playing fine. Just isn't really not one of those guys that isn't really going to stand out other than you know way he played physically and way he can fight. But he's just a guy who can just quietly compliment Victor Hedman. That's all he's supposed to do.
Joe, you look at a guy like Vladislav Namestnikov, and you know it took him 31 games for him to get 3 goals last year. He's got 3 goals in 7 games. He's playing alongside Steven Stamkos and Nikita Kucherov. How has he been able to play with two elite, I guess, linemen and you know keep up with the high level it's expected of playing along them?
Well, he played with them at the beginning of last year, too, until Stamkos got hurt in November. So he's a very steady player. He's a very smart player. He knows his role. He doesn't need to have the puck on a stick all the time. He knows how to get off his stick pretty quickly to get to those two guys. And I think he plays with confidence when he has Stamkos and Kucherov around. He got 3 goals, 1 last night. And he's responsible defensively. He can get back if they need him to. So overall, just a very smart hockey player, a guy who's not a flashy one. He won't be scoring 25 goals a season, but he can do his part and play his role on a star-studded line like that.
Joe Smith covers the Tampa Bay Lightning for the Tampa Bay Times. Joe, really appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks for joining us this evening.
No problem. Take care, guys.
Take care, Joe. Let's head to break. When we come back, we talk about some coaches that may be on the hot seat, some organizations that are feeling the pressure. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Wednesday evening on TSN 1290, this is NHL This Week, and this segment is brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys, known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. You can always check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. Stop in there, check out the operation, tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Montreal Canadiens, one of the teams that are off to really a horrendous start this season. 1-4-1 for the Habs. They played in San Jose last night. They were losers by a 5-2 margin, a place where the Sharks have had the Habs numbers for really much of the last decade, especially in San Jose, so not a place the Habs have had any success. The boys at That's Hockey, Gino Reda, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie McLennan, they talked about the Montreal Canadiens' start to the season, had some interesting comments. Here's the boys of That's Hockey.
Is this what the Montreal Canadiens are this year, or is this just a bad start?
I think this is what they are, Gino. I didn't like them in preseason. I don't like the way they play. I don't like the way their defense is set up. It's so important in today's National Hockey League for the defenseman to have foot speed and go back and get the puck and transport it to the center ice position. And I don't like that position either for the Montreal Canadiens. And when you put it all together, you've got a D-core that's not very mobile. I don't like what's up the middle for the Montreal Canadiens. Obviously, I love Carey Price. I think he's the best in the game. But sometimes you talk about different play. I just don't like the mix. And that's the only way I can put it as far as the Montreal Canadiens go. I don't like the mix of players they have there.
And that's where I'm headed. You mentioned Carey Price. Carey Price hasn't been mid-season form. So Carey Price, at the top of his game, gives them an opportunity to compete nightly. And that's what the Montreal Canadiens rely on. There's been some leaky plays. There's been some plays that he's looked off kilter and not comfortable. When he is comfortable, We know what he's capable of doing, and that's dominating games. And let's not forget, you're sitting on the bench, and you see Carey Price maybe not having his A game. I think that ripples right through the dressing room, right through onto the bench. I believe the Montreal Canadiens will find a way to put it together. It's going to take time. You've got Jonathan Drouin, who's come into a new organization. They're asking him to be the number one centerman. Give him a little bit of time, a month. I think they'll be fine.
Differing opinions. I'm not sure that they're going to be fine, but Claude Julien, I mean, we're the segment we're going to talk about coaches on the hot seat. Or the organization in Montreal is definitely feeling the pressure, but they're the Montreal Canadiens. They feel pressure all the time. This year is no different. I mean, Marc Bergevin definitely is probably feeling some pressure in the front office there. But, I mean, Claude Julien has just been the head coach there. He came late in the season last year. He's not on the hot seat for the poor start, is he?
Well, I think it should be Alex Galchenyuk, it should be Thomas Plekanec, Drew. Max Pacioretty has one goal in six games. That's the captain of your team, right? Jonathan Drouin has been fine in the first six games. I think he's got 5 points in the first six games. You know, Jamie McLennan talked about Carey Price in that clip. Carey Price has not been good, but the entire team has not been good. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. Claude Julien came over from Boston back in Montreal for the second time. I agree. I mean, he's not going anywhere. Claude Julien, as far as I'm concerned, is one of the best coaches probably of the last 15 years. But this Canadiens team, I think, has to be feeling the pressure, and I think it has a lot to do with how they finished the season last year in the first round of the playoffs, right? Sure. It's the same old struggles. Alex Galchenyuk couldn't score. Thomas Plekanec couldn't score. Brendan Gallagher obviously had some injury problems. He couldn't score. Brendan Gallagher has actually been one of their top players. But to me, it also starts with the defense, right? Mm-hmm. Mikhail Sergachev was traded, but he's a rookie. It's more so Andrei Markov. Andrei Markov was a staple of your defense, a top pair, second pair guy for years, and we all know that Andrei Markov is not a member of the Canadiens anymore. So I think, you know, there are weaknesses everywhere. We know the Habs are not strong up the middle, right? You have Jonathan Drouin, Thomas Plekanec, and Philip Deneau right now, but Jonathan Drouin is a natural winger, mm-hmm. right? So there are problems everywhere on this Montreal Canadiens team, Drew, but when you talk about, you know, other teams and their coaches who might be on the hot seat, I think you have to look at Edmonton with Todd McClellan. You have to look at San Jose with Pete DeBoer. And when you're talking about the New York Rangers, Alain Vigneault might be on the hot seat more than anybody. They've started off with one win in six games. And that's because, as we know, Drew...
Seven games now.
Sorry,
one,
seven
five
games.
And one, the Rangers 1-5-1
right.
thus far this year. Only 17 goals in seven games, so they can't really score. They're giving up too many goals with 26 goals against, just under 4 goals a game. I mean... Alain Vigneault has been the head coach in New York now for a long, long time now. And you wonder at some point in time, even the best coaches, and I think Alain Vigneault is a pretty damn good coach,
yep.
they just have a shelf life. And you wonder at some point in time, you know, has a coach's message just turned stale? And is that maybe what they're experiencing in New York? I mean, that's another team. You look up the middle for the New York Rangers. That's another team that's just not strong enough up the middle.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that, and you kind of wonder, even though they had salary cap problems, if trading Derek Stepan was the best move to make, right?
Right.
And you obviously, you know, got the first round pick, and you picked up Anthony DeAngelo. He gives you some depth, even though he's a young defenseman. But as you said, Drew, I mean, Mika Zibanejad's actually had a great start to the season, and I really like Kevin Hayes. I think he's better suited to be your second-line center, which he has been at times. David Desharnais, I think on a good team, is a fourth-line center. They brought back Adam Cracknell, who has some history with the coaching staff. So I think that the Rangers definitely can still get themselves out of this, but it's definitely not as good of a team as it was last year. You look at that defense. I know Mark Stahl has struggled. I'm a big fan of Mark Stahl, but he has struggled big time. He's found himself on the third pair. We know that Kevin Shattenkirk is more of an offensive defenseman. Dan Girardi is gone. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of turnover on that back end, and you think back to the year that the Rangers went to the Stanley Cup Final against the Kings. I mean, they had one of the top defenses in the league, right? And Henrik Lundqvist has not had a good start to the season.
Now,
so I
Henrik
think there
Lundqvist
are a lot of parallels there between the Habs and the Rangers.
Yeah, Lundqvist is a notoriously slow starter. The
sure.
month of October, I believe, is his worst month when it comes to his goaltending numbers. So, if the Rangers want to look at something, you know, that they can grab onto, it is that. But both of those teams are playoff teams from last season. We know they actually met in the first round of the playoffs, and there was the Rangers who knocked off the Habs. But between them, 13 games played and only two victories between those two teams, you know, at some point in time, it's not... I mean, it used to be that you maybe had a month in order to get yourself... you know, settled, and that nobody would push the panic button for a month. But I mean, in this day and age in the NHL, it really doesn't take much to get teams to push the panic button, and especially in sort of cities like New York and Montreal, where there's a lot of newspapers that need to be printed and a lot of ink that needs to be used up. And you wonder when something has to give in either of those two cities, Sean.
I really like what Jamie McLennan said there regarding Montreal and just the mounting pressure on the team that if Carey Price is off just a little bit, you look at a team that has a lot of trouble scoring, they don't have a lot of depth at forward, and when your all-star caliber to the highest degree goaltender is looking a little shaky, you're going to have to you think to yourself, we're going to have to score three, possibly four goals tonight, and that compounds mentally. And that's a bad situation. And it's very similar for the Rangers, who have for years have relied on Henrik Lundqvist to bail them out of not just games, but certain situations in games. And if you can't score and your all-star goaltender isn't helping you out, mentally that takes a serious toll.
Look. Go ahead, Ez.
Well, and you have teams like the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Columbus Blue Jackets who have only lost one game so far each.
Mm-hmm.
And you're losing points, right? So the Rangers only have 3 points, and there are some teams that are already at 10 and 11 points.
The Blue Jackets and the Devils, surprisingly. I mean, the Devils, no one expects that to continue, but Devils are playing fun hockey. They won. They beat the Lightning last night by a 5-4 margin. But you're absolutely right. I mean, you can't fall too far behind. And the Rangers right now are seven points behind the Blue Jackets. And based on what you saw the Blue Jackets last night, you don't expect them to struggle really for any significant period of time. So the longer that you have a slide to start the season, the more difficult it's going to be to bounce back.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, out of all of the teams we've mentioned, I would say I would be the least concerned about the Edmonton Oilers.
1-4-0 the Oilers are. They won that first game in Vancouver when, you know, McDavid had the hat trick. He hasn't scored since.
Isn't that crazy just to say out loud?
Yeah, I mean, somebody said that, and I had to do it. I did a double take.
Yeah,
I'm
like,
really? He doesn't even just have one goal here. That he hasn't scored since that opening game. They lost again last night on home ice to the Carolina Hurricanes.
Well, they haven't won since the Jets defeated them.
Yeah, they've won one game on the year. The opening night in Vancouver. That was
crazy.
Pardon me. The opening night against Calgary, not Vancouver. They went to Vancouver after that and lost. They've lost their last four games.
You know, and Drew, you mentioned Connor McDavid, and obviously that's a concern that he's not scoring because you depend on him for a lot of your offense, in addition to Leon Draisaitl and others, but mainly those two players.
Sure, Draisaitl out of the lineup with concussion/eye problems.
Right, and to me, the bigger problem is, again, the defense. It always comes back to the defense for me.
Sure.
Because if you can't keep the puck out of your own net, it's tough to win a lot of these games, you know, if you only score one or two goals, but it also is pretty hard to win games when you're giving up five or six. They gave up five to the Carolina Hurricanes, they gave up six to the Ottawa Senators, and not to mention the Jets put five past Cam Talbot, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the Edmonton Oilers are not playing well in front of their goaltender right now, and that was the big difference in the Oilers from last year to 2 years ago, was they brought in Cam Talbot, and then they brought in Adam Larson, and their defense was better. I do think this is going to turn around. I mean, the Ottawa Senators, I think, surprised the Oilers going into Edmonton and defeating them 6-1, but when you're talking about this Oilers team, I mean, Connor McDavid's going to get his goals. They're going to turn this around. So I'm not as concerned about the Oilers, but you might think that Todd McClellan is a little bit nervous right now.
I don't know that he, you know, of the three coaches that we just mentioned, and I guess you can throw in Pete DeBoer as well in San Jose. I mean, of those four coaches, I mean, DeBoer's got the highest odds of being the first NHL coach to be dismissed. That news came out, I believe it was last week.
7-2.
Yeah, 7-2 odds. So 3.5 to 1.
I wouldn't read too much into those odds.
I wouldn't read much into them either. I mean, it's an article that gets written because somebody comes out with the press release.
Because Hustler and Remus need to bet on something other than on a nice play.
Yeah, that's something other than DraftKings. They need to throw some money down on something. But I don't know that DeBoer would be in trouble. I don't see that. Vigneault, though, if this continues, wouldn't shock me. He's been there for so long that you wonder at some point in time, just does the message get too stale? And, I mean, 1-5-1, you know, I don't know how much. Obviously, it's not going to happen imminently. But 1-5-1, if that turns into 2-12-2.
And you know that you have Lindy Ruff there, who could possibly take over.
Yeah, you got to wonder if anybody what anybody would see in Lindy Ruff's performance, especially in Dallas, that would lead you to believe that he's still going to be an NHL head coach.
Well, let's not forget that Dallas's goaltending and defense was putrid last year.
Right, but he wasn't able to rectify it.
Well, could anybody rectify it?
Probably not.
Could Mike Babcock rectify it?
The second coming of Scotty Bowman couldn't.
Maybe Gerard Gallant. Apparently, he's a really good coach.
Yeah, what he's doing in Vegas is certainly up there.
They also have Scotty Arneal that can take over.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Former, of course, Manitoba Moose and Columbus Blue Jackets head coach.
The point is, the New York Rangers are in win-now mode. Certainly. I mean, this isn't a team, you know, that is just hoping to get into the playoffs. They have to get into the playoffs.
Certainly. And they can't wait till they're too far behind if they have to make a move. When we come back, our good friend Josh Cooper is going to join us. We'll look around the NHL with Mr. Cooper. That's up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, you're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Josh Cooper. First and foremost, Joshua, congratulations on becoming a father.
Mazel tov!
Yes, thank you. I'm a very sleep-deprived new father talking to you guys right now. My son does not rest much, but I still love him. So that's the most important thing.
Josh, are you and Drew going to talk about changing diapers now?
We already have.
Well, yes, we have. We had a bit of a back and forth on Twitter earlier. I had two situations, actually. One at 2 a.m. in which my son actually started peeing mid-diaper change. And then one at 6 a.m. when he started pooping mid-diaper change. I'm sure you've had that experience. It's kind of like this weird rite of passage. And, it's kind of funny how the first time it happens, it's almost jarring. And then you kind of figure out sort of your way to keep the sleep sack and the onesie to maintain its pristine nature. So you don't have to change him out of that. It's certainly an interesting thing.
He's absolutely right. And you just become immune to it. It's just like, you know, after it happens that one time, because you're right, that first time it's like, you know, a bit of a shock to your system. This is what your life has become. After that, you're just sort of completely immune to it, and you just go with the flow. It really is remarkable how quickly your priorities and your expectations change when you first have a kid.
Oh, it's absolutely insane. I mean, and the crazy thing too is I have an entire group of sports teams to push on him that if he has my luck, we'll all lose a lot because all my favorite teams lose. It's interesting.
You're not going to turn him into a Vandy fan, are you? Vanderbilt University, of course, being Josh's.
Here's the issue with that. So my mother-in-law is a UCLA grad. My sister-in-law is a Michigan grad. And my first cousin went to Alabama. So he's going to have to pick from one of those three as his good team, but his base is always going to be Vanderbilt.
Well, I can tell you what his good team should be, and that should be Alabama, because, I mean, those other three teams have had some struggles as of late, and Alabama usually is the perennial national champion when it comes to, of course, U.S. college football.
Absolutely. And Nick Saban, he's a force of nature, that guy. And I can give you all sorts of stories on my time covering him, but I don't know if the readers, if the listeners in Winnipeg want to hear about my time in Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
I think it's a very niche market that we'd be looking at, that we'd be covering at that point in time. I think you and I would enjoy the SEC football conversation, but that might be about it. So why don't we switch things back to the ice, Josh? And you're based in Los Angeles, and Los Angeles, of course, close proximity to the Vegas area, and the Vegas Golden Knights are 5-1 to begin their inaugural NHL campaign. Just how surprised and impressed are you with what Gerard Gallant and the Vegas Golden Knights are doing to start their season?
It's been a good start. There's a lot of momentum. I feel like there's just sort of this kind of
scrappy little underdog mentality that those guys have, and they're really pushing it hard. And you know, James Neal, for example, I mean, 6 goals in 6 games, just phenomenal for the Golden Knights so far. And I think there's a lot that's going on. I mean, one is just obviously kind of the sort of, energy boost from your first season. The other is they're playing, you know, for a city that's healing, that's had a, you know, obviously a very tragic situation there with the shooting a couple weeks ago. And I think that they're playing for a lot of Vegas in regards to that. And it's kind of I think you almost have a double emotional situation there. And I mean, yeah, is this team the most talented team in the NHL? No. Do I think they're going to make the playoffs? No, I don't think that at all. But I have been impressed with how they started and just kind of the way that they've captured the imagination of Vegas and played relatively well. I mean, I don't think any of us knew what to expect out of an expansion team in the salary cap era, but clearly they've shown that they can be competitive and that they can do some good things.
Josh, the Los Angeles Kings have yet to lose a game, and they've had 4 of their first 5 games at home. Is this sustainable, do you think?
No, they will lose in regulation, I can promise you that.
Way to go out on a ledge there.
Yeah. But I like what I've seen out of them so far. I mean, yes, they've started the year at home, but, I mean, Dustin Brown and Anže Kopitar have been fantastic to start the season, and Dustin Brown specifically has been just a wonderful surprise for that team. It just seemed like he was lost for a while, and now he's suddenly been found as a guy who's putting the puck in the net and really just bullying his way towards the net and finding ways to create some offense where he hasn't been able to do so. And it's kind of interesting in the sense that when you talk to people around the Kings during the summer, they all said the same thing, which is basically, look, you know, if Anže Kopitar can find his touch, if Tyler Toffoli can come back and show he's got something again, then maybe they'll be in a situation where they could compete. And that's exactly what's happening. Kopitar, 8 points in 5 games. Toffoli, 4 points. Drew Doughty has been tremendous for them. And I really thought that he was the guy who was going to benefit the most from the coaching change. And they fired Daryl Sutter and instilled John Stevens just because he's a guy that has an incredible amount of offensive talent that he's never been able to use basically under Daryl Sutter. And you're seeing sort of that, you're seeing a lot of that come out right now. And they're looking really good. And Jonathan Quick has been excellent so far. And Darcy Kuemper, their backup, has been pretty good too. So, I mean, this is a team that at least for right now looks good. But they have a bit of a road trip coming up. They've got a lot of stuff going on in regards to just trying to keep things sustainable. And, you know, they have a tough game against the Montreal Canadiens tonight as well.
Josh, you touched on the coaching change. I want to ask you just what have you seen different from the LA Kings under John Stevens as opposed to, you know, this pretty much, not the same roster, but similar-looking roster under Daryl Sutter?
Well, the one thing you notice when you walk into that locker room is that there's a lot more smiles. There's a lot more upbeat people. Granted, part of that has to do with winning, but I did go in there before the season started, and people there just seem, I don't know, just a little bit more chill, a little bit more relaxed, and I think that does have to do with John Stevens. I mean, it's not that he's not a guy who, it's not that he does not know how to crack the whip when he needs to, but he is certainly a guy who understands kind of sort of today's athlete and how you have to kind of deal with the egos and deal with a lot of the pressures that come with being a pro athlete today. And Daryl Sutter, I mean, he won 2 Stanley Cups. He went to another cup final with the Calgary Flames. You can't deny the success he's had, but he can grate on you a little bit. He can wear on you a little bit. And I think what you're seeing right now is this kind of, I don't want to call it a cloud, because look, I mean, the guy won 2 Stanley Cups and went to another conference final. It's not like the success wasn't there, but sort of, it's almost like this kind of period of just slogging along is over, and everyone just seems like they're in a much better mood around there right now. And I think that does have to do with the coaching change, and you're seeing it with how guys seem to be just enjoying playing a little bit more. And I think that that's pretty important right now.
Josh Cooper, our guest on NHL This Week. He's, of course, covered the NHL for many years. Josh, if I told you that Connor McDavid has not scored a goal in 2 weeks, would you think that I'm crazy, or would you think that he's injured?
I don't know. I mean, players go through slumps. I wouldn't be shocked if he just starts racking up the goals again. I mean, he had a hat trick the first game, right? I'm pretty sure he did. I mean, he's a guy who can score goals in bunches. I'm really not worried about him. I mean, it just happens every now and then. I mean, I just remember in the playoffs last year, I mean, he had to fight through every check. And, I mean, when everyone's kind of keying on you, it's hard, and it's a game of adjustments, and it's a game of trying to figure out ways to sort of get around a lot of these difficult situations where guys are double-teaming you and slashing you and cross-checking you. And I think he's going to eventually do that. But, yeah, I mean, his lack of offensive production of late is certainly surprising and probably the most surprising thing in the NHL this year so far in some respects, because, I mean, one thing that I've always marveled at with, and we always sort of compare Connor McDavid to Sidney Crosby, is the fact that Sidney Crosby is a guy who's always very, very consistently putting up points, and McDavid, you know, it hasn't quite been at the same level. But also, I mean, the Oilers have had a few days off here and there, so we'll see if he turns it around. But, yeah, I mean, I think he's going to be okay. But for sure, it's a little bit confusing.
Josh, the Toronto Maple Leafs defeated the Capitals 2-0 last night. They're also in action tonight against the Detroit Red Wings. They're 5-1 in six games. They have the third best goal differential in the league behind the Philadelphia Flyers and the Chicago Blackhawks. Are you prepared to say that the Leafs are now a bona fide Stanley Cup contender?
I thought they were a year ago, to be honest. I mean, they gave the Caps all they could handle last year in the playoffs, and they have a lot of really, really good players on their team. I mean, Austin Matthews is one of the most unbelievably efficient players I've ever seen. You know, Nazem Kadri has become a very nice sort of second center type complement. And you have, you know, William Nylander and Mitch Marner and all these other guys. I mean, I think the issue with them just kind of comes down to defense. But I think that they, you know, I thought if you make the playoffs in this league, you can go to the Cup final. I mean, Nashville had the lowest point total of any team in the playoffs last year. And in my opinion, if Ryan Johansson hadn't gotten injured, they would have won the Stanley Cup. So I could certainly see the Maple Leafs going on a pretty big run. And I think they certainly are a Stanley Cup contender right now, just as I thought they were a year ago.
Josh, you were privileged with a pretty unique opportunity to hang out with Coyotes GM John Chyka, watch a preseason game with him. I'm just curious as to what that whole experience was like, you know, what it was like watching a game with a GM as quick and bright as John Chyka. And, you know, what did you learn about him?
Well, I learned that he's not this kind of numbers whiz kid that everybody points him out, or again, everyone kind of paints him as. And everyone, I mean, it's people who don't know him. They just sort of know the fact that he was hired because of his reliance on analytics. I think that's a part of his personality, but he's a real hockey guy. I mean, he's sitting up in the press box with Steve Sullivan, who's played over 1,000 games in the NHL, and they're basically speaking the same sort of hockey jargon that I personally still am trying to figure out after all these years of being around the game and covering the NHL. So he's a legitimate hockey guy. He knows what he's looking at. He knows what he's trying to see, and he's trying to figure out the best way for this team to win and be successful. The thing that's surprising to me is the fact that I think that this team should be way better than it is right now. I don't understand why the Coyotes have been so bad this season. Maybe it's just kind of a losing culture there that they're trying to break out of and whatnot. But, you know, I think that the one thing I took away from sitting with John Chyka is he is a hockey guy through and through. He's not just sort of this numbers guy. And I think that, you know, as he matures and sort of grows, and more people kind of get to know him and see him in the game, they'll understand that as well.
All right, Josh, let's get to the important question here. Yeah. Do we know who's going to be in the Bachelor Winter Games come February 2018? Is it going to be Nick? Is it going to be Corinne? Who's it going to be?
Hang on, before you answer, maybe explain to the audience what the hell Ezzy just said, because I don't know what he said.
Well, first we have to try to figure out what the Bachelor Winter Games actually are, because I don't think anybody has any clue other than it's another spinoff, which hence makes us very, very excited for this. I think it's going to air during the Olympics to try to act as counter-programming,
oh,
I guess. I don't know, but the one...
Is the NHL going to it?
Well, no, they couldn't figure out a deal with Chris Harrison. The one guy that I had read, that Reality Steve, our reality TV guru, was Peter, the runner-up from Rachel's season on The Bachelorette. So that's the one guy that we know. And I know a lot of people were very upset that Peter was not named The Bachelor, and it was Ari. And I know I think I'm speaking in an alien language to both of you right now, mm-hmm. for all of you right now. But
not me, Josh. I love The Bachelor.
Well, what do you think of Ari then?
I actually didn't watch that season.
Oh, wow. God, you're breaking my heart.
But I watched the season with Nick Vile.
Oh, well, I mean, that was the best season. I mean, that and JoJo's season, because Vanderbilt graduate Jordan Rogers won. He's the most successful Vanderbilt athlete I can think of by winning that show.
Hey, Jay Cutler.
We don't claim him.
Well, we started the interview by talking about our young children, and somehow we ended the interview by talking about people that are stupider than our very young children, that being the Bachelors. Josh, thank you, buddy. Enjoy parenthood, and if you need any tips or anything, I'll give you my wife's number.
Any time. I'm excited for yet another sleepless night and a coffee-filled day, but it's been the absolute time of my life so far. It's been amazing. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Attaboy, Josh. We'll do it again soon. When we come back, we'll look at what the TSN insider trading guys are talking about. One final segment on this Wednesday evening. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week. Segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Also want to mention, of course, if you're looking for a place to catch Friday night's game, Bernstein's Deli. Official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. It's located in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. Like I said, if you're looking for a place to watch the game, they got their big screen TVs fired up. They got great food and drink special. Hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's. Your next opportunity this coming Friday night as the Jets and the Wild will do battle at Bell MTS Place.
What's with these 5-day breaks in October? I don't like it.
I know. You have to watch The Bachelor or something.
I read you the opening, the tease line for the Winter Games Bachelor website?
Please, I would insist
move
on it.
Move over, figure skating. There's a new favorite winter sport making its TV debut. From arch rivals to villains, we'll take competitive dating to a chilling new level. I'm
just going to give myself a lobotomy. It'll just be less painful that way. I think that's probably the better course of action.
What on earth is this show going to be about?
I've never actually seen an episode of The Bachelor itself, which is something I'm very proud of.
Drew, for a guy who's been in a serious relationship for this long, how have you never watched The Bachelor?
I'm glad you referred to my marriage as a serious relationship.
Well, in the early days of you and Laura, you must have watched an episode of The Bachelor or The Bachelorette or something.
Laura doesn't watch The Bachelor, but The Bachelorette. I'll give her credit.
You have for sure watched the Gilmore Girls, though.
Absolutely. No question about
everyone
that.
Everyone loves Lorelai.
I got no problem with the Gilmore Girls. I mean, we definitely watched the Gilmore Girls, and we're very excited when Netflix came out with their four episode, whatever the hell it was, a couple years ago. But no, Laura is not a fan of The Bachelor. I'm thankful for that. I don't know. You can watch it and report back. I mean, that's why we have to have Josh on every couple months to talk about it. And I know Jordan Rogers was on because it split the family, and now Aaron Rodgers doesn't talk to his brother and his parents as a result or something. I really don't understand anything. But
boys, I think we should be talking some hockey, or I think we might be off air by the time the show is over.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of people who would have advocated that many a year ago. And as I was saying,
who's advocating for that?
Me. The insider trading guys got together last night on TSN. Here's what they had to say about the Flames arena situation.
Well, the Calgary Flames have no choice. They've got to try and hang in at the Calgary Saddle Dome for as long as they can. They've publicly stated that they are no longer pursuing a new arena build. Now, that can change locally with the politics, I suppose, depending on the mayor and whether or not he puts his weight behind that push. But that seems unlikely. What's interesting is, and Calgary fans will embrace with this, the Calgary Flames used to be one of the top 10 revenue-generating teams in the National Hockey League. Not that long ago. Now we find out that the Calgary Flames are in fact a team that receives revenue sharing, and there are some who believe that if they don't get this new arena, then it's not going to be that long down the road before they cannot compete in terms of what the other clubs can bring around the league.
That discussion, of course, being precipitated by Naheed Nenshi, Calgary's mayor, being reelected, much to the chagrin of the Calgary Flames ownership, who were publicly and vocally against his reelection.
Worse than Trump.
Worse than Trump, according to Sean Kelso, who is the Flames' second in command in their communications department. I think Mr. Kelso might need to... let me put it this way. He quickly deleted that tweet for obvious reasons. Here's an idea. Look, the Calgary Flames aren't going anywhere. We've said that on this show many times before. How about they pay for their own arena? Just throwing that out there as a suggestion, or come to the table with a reasonable offer for the city of Calgary to consider. But the number of people who are willing to carry the water for the Calgary Flames and their ownership there's certainly people who are quite willing to do that for them.
Right, and I strongly believe that, you know, Naheed Nenshi getting reelected isn't going to have a negative impact on Calgary getting a new arena, because we know it's going to be a public-private partnership, right, Drew? So, I mean, it's going to be a combination of provincial and private dollars here. So, I mean, this is far from being over. But it looks like, you know, within the next 3 or 4 years, they're going to get a new arena. But in the meantime, you know, we're no closer to knowing when that's going to happen.
We are no closer to knowing when that's going to happen. It's just the public posturing that the Flames ownership is going through is a little sad. It's a lot pathetic.
A little obnoxious.
Yeah, you know, the first proposal they came up with was outrageous, and so they poisoned the well. If anyone to blame, it's themselves. And then, you know, Brian Burke went through his song and dance, and then they brought in Gary Bettman to go through his, and then Ken King through his public hissy fit. It's like, if you really want to be a legitimate partner with the city of Calgary and you want to bring a legitimate offer to the table, do that, but don't be publicly campaigning for the mayor's opponent is not a smart...
Projectile of professionalism.
Yeah, not a smart course of action. I'm not sure who's running their operations there, but they might want to reconsider that that strategy in its entirety. Moving to the Los Angeles Kings, where a couple of defensemen, big-name defensemen, could potentially find themselves on the trade block.
Yeah, down the road is the key way to put it there, James. Listen, I think the Kings internally wonder really how much scoring they have up front. And if they feel as the season goes on that they need to upgrade tangibly their top 9 forward group, they could put out either Jake Muzzin or Alec Martinez on the trade market to see what that fetches. And listen, it's not every day that a top 4 defenseman in season is made available, and one that's not a rental player. Both these guys have term past this year. So, yes, this is something I believe the Kings have discussed internally, the possibility of doing this, again, later in the season, and just to see all these defensemen crave teams, what they'd be willing to offer for one or the other.
You know, Drew, this is surprising to me, because we just talked about the Kings with Josh Cooper. They're off to a great start,
mm-hmm.
and they've benefited from having a lot of home games early in the season. But to me, I mean, Jake Muzzin has been a top 4 defenseman for the last, 4 or 5 years,
mm-hmm.
and he's under contract for 3 more years at a very reasonable cap hit of $4 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're talking about Alec Martinez, he was just signed to a contract extension within the last year, right? So the LA Kings are pretty thin on defense after Drew Doughty and after Martinez and Muzzin. I mean, Oscar Fantenberg is a rookie. He's playing in the Kings' top 6 right now. I mean, the Kings don't have a lot of depth on defense, never mind on forward. Mm-hmm. So when you start talking about trading Alec Martinez and Jake Muzzin, who are in your top 4 right now, I mean, I just don't get it. I realize there are salary cap concerns and all that, even though the LA Kings are in a better cap position than they were a couple of years ago. I just don't understand why you would want to trade
you have a strength, and I know you know the thought being that you trade from a strength, from a position of strength, but if you're going to make your defense mediocre and you're going to make your offense just average, it doesn't seem like that's a good trade-off by making a move like that.
I just don't think the defense is a strength, though, right now. I mean, it used to be. I mean, it's more of a strength than a forward because you have a Norris Trophy winner there.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about, you know, once you get past, you know, Muzzin, Martinez, and Doughty, and, you know, you're talking about Derek Forbert, you're talking about, you know, we mentioned Oscar Fantenberg, who this is his first year in the NHL. I mean, I don't think they can afford to trade either Muzzin or Martinez. As far as I'm concerned, you got to build through the draft at this point.
I would agree with you there, Eze. That's it for this Wednesday evening here on NHL This Week. Big thank you to our guests, Joe Smith of the Tampa Bay Times, Josh Cooper, and Mike Greenlay, in case you missed any of the program. It's available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Just subscribe either via Apple or your Android device. Get it sent to your device each and every week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. For Sean Asor, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.